Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams. Tertiary Phase.
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has much to say on the subject of time travel and its part in the unhallowed fate of the Cathedral of Chalism. It has, however, very little to say about the abduction of people by the remote reprogramming of teleportation coordinates to bring them to a Cathedral of Hate. This is because the abductee in question, Arthur Dent, is the only creature, apart from its creator, to witness the cathedral in all its awe-inspiring subterranean horror. But first, he must endure the visions in the labyrinth that surrounds it.
Who's that? Is anyone there? Grow up, Arthur. There are no hideous monsters here. If there are, I'll eat my... Ah! What do you want?
Bet you weren't expecting to see me again.
But I've never ever seen a housefly as big as a dog.
Well, perhaps you remember me better as the rabbit.
The rabbit? It's only a hologram, Arthur. Keep calm. The rabbit. The rabbit? No, I'm afraid I don't.
Born in darkness, raised in darkness. One morning I poked my head out for the first time into the bright new world and got it split open by what felt like some primitive instrument made of flint. Made by you, Arthur Dent, and wielded by you. You turned my skin into a bag for keeping interesting stones in. I happen to know that because in my next life, I came back as a fly again and you swatted me, again.
Yes, but
only this time you swatted me with the bag you'd made of my previous skin. Arthur Dent, you are not merely a cruel and heartless man, you are also staggeringly tactless.
I don't really...
I see you have lost the bag. Probably got bored with it, did you?
No.
Meet the newt you trod on. That was me, too. As if you didn't know.
No?
The interesting thing about reincarnation is that most people, most spirits, are not aware that it is happening to them. I was aware. That is, I became aware. Slowly, gradually. I could hardly help it, could I? Well, the same thing kept happening over and over and over again. Every life I ever lived, I got killed by Arthur Dent. Any world, any body, any time, I'm just getting settled down. Along comes Arthur Dent. Pow, he kills me. Hard not to notice. Bit of a memory jogger. Bit of a pointer. Bit of a bloody giveaway.
No, really,
that's funny, my spirit would say to itself, as it winged its way back to the netherworld after another fruitless, dent-ended venture into the land of the living. That man who just ran over me as I was hopping across the road in my favourite pond looked a little familiar. And gradually I got to piece it together, Dent, you multiple me murderer.
But what I don't understand...
Here's the moment, Dent. Here's the moment when at last I knew.
No, I'm sorry. I'm sure I've never been in a huge pink wet cave with a vast, slimy creature rolling around over white tombstones. Oh, my God. It's the inside of my mouth. And that's an oyster. I'm swallowing an oyster. An oyster that... Oh, was... you.
Tell me it was a coincidence, Dent. I dare you to tell me it was a coincidence.
It was a coincidence.
It was not!
It was!
If it was a coincidence, then my name is not Agrajag!
And presumably you would claim that that was your name?
Yes!
Well, I'm afraid it was still a coincidence.
Come in here and say that!
Right, I will! I can assure you that it was a...
God!
The Cathedral of Hate that Arthur now enters is the product of a mind that is not merely twisted, but actually sprained. and consequently has no place in a quality family publication such as The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is why this addendum concerning Arthur's current location can only be found in pirated editions opposite banned commercials for Eccentrica Galumbit's chat room and virtual sauna.
Give me a daddy. Oh, you look so good.
The chamber has been carved out of the inside of a mountain, and beyond the twisted buttresses, overhead it is utterly black. Where it isn't black, Arthur is inclined to wish that it was, because the colours with which some of the unspeakable details are picked out range from ultraviolet to infrared, taking in liver purple, loathsome lilac, matte yellow, burnt ombre, and gangrene on the way. The unspeakable details which these colours pick out are gargoyles, which all look inwards from the walls, from the pillars, from the flying buttresses and choir stalls, towards an immense statue, which we will come to in a moment.
Good grief!
Around the monumental walls are vast engraved stone tablets, in memory of those who've fallen to Arthur Dent. The names of some of these commemorated are underlined with asterisks against them. So, for instance, the name of a cow, which has been slaughtered, and of which Arthur Dent happened to eat a fillet steak, has the plainest engraving. Whereas the name of a fish which Arthur himself caught, cooked, decided he didn't like and left on the side of the plate has a double underlining, three sets of asterisks and a bleeding dagger appended, just to make the point. And what is most disturbing to Arthur about it is the very clear implication that all these people and creatures are indeed the same person, over and over again. And it's equally clear that this same person is, however unfairly, extremely upset and annoyed. An annoyance which now spans the whole of time and space in its infinite umbrage, and given its fullest expression in the statue at the centre of all this monstrosity. A statue of Arthur Dent.
That's me.
And an unflattering one. 50 feet tall if it's an inch, which it's not, crammed with insult to its subject matter, from the small pimple on the side of his nose to the poorish cut of his dressing gown, there is no aspect of Arthur Dent which isn't lambasted and vilified.
Oh, please.
With each of the 30 arms which the sculptor, in a fit of artistic fervour, has decided to give him, he is either braining a rabbit, swatting a fly, pulling a wishbone, picking a flea from his hair, or doing something which Arthur's first glance cannot quite identify.
Surely not.
His feet, incidentally, are stamping on ants.
Oh, this is trying too hard.
Arthur is depicted as an evil, rapacious, bloodied ogre, slaughtering his way through an innocent one-man universe.
Yeah.
And waddling round him, savouring the moment, is the black, razor-toothed creature that he has supposedly been persecuting all this time. It looks for all the galaxy like a mad, fat, scruffy bat.
Stop poking me!
I was at a cricket match.
Looking like that?
Not in this body! Not in this body! This is my last body, my last life! This is my revenge body, my kill Arthur Dent body, my last chance. I had to fight to get it too.
But how could this possibly?
I was at a cricket match. I had a weak heart condition. But what, I said to my wife, can happen to me at a cricket match?
Oh, yes.
As I'm watching, what happens? Two people quite maliciously appear out of thin air just in front of me. The last thing I can't help but notice before my poor heart gives out in shock is that one of them is Arthur Dent, wearing a rabbit bone in his beard. Coincidence?
Yes.
Coincidence?
Look, it's just fate playing silly buggers with you, with me, with us. It's a complete coincidence.
What have you got against me, Dent?
Nothing, honestly, nothing.
Seems a strange way to relate to somebody you've got nothing against. Killing them all the time. Very curious piece of social interaction, I would call that. I would also call it a lie.
Look, I'm very sorry. There's been a terrible misunderstanding. Now, I've really got to go. I'm meant to be helping save the universe.
At one point, I decided to give up. Yes, I would not come back. I would stay in the netherworld. And what happened?
I don't know.
I got yanked involuntarily back into the physical world. As a bunch of petunias. In, I might add, a bowl.
Oh, dear.
This particular happy little lifetime started off with me in my bowl, unsupported, 300 miles above the surface of a particularly grim planet. Not a naturally tenable position for a bowl of petunias, you might think. And you'd be right. That life ended a very short while later, 300 miles lower, in, I might again add, the fresh wreckage of a whale. My spirit brother.
Well,
on the way down, I couldn't help noticing a flashy-looking white spaceship. And looking out of a port on this flashy-looking spaceship was a smug-looking Arthur Dent. Coincidence?
Goodbye.
You may go after I have killed you.
No, that won't be any use, because I have to save the universe, you see. I have to find a silver bale, that's the point. Tricky thing to do, dead.
Save the universe? You should have thought of that before you started your vendetta against me. What about the time when you were on Stavromula Beta and someone tried to assassinate you and you ducked? Who do you think that bullet hit?
I've never been there.
What did you say?
Never been there. What are you talking about?
You must have been there. You were responsible for my death there as everywhere else. An innocent bystander.
I've never heard of the place. I've certainly never had anyone try to assassinate me, other than you. Perhaps I go there later, do you think?
You haven't been to Stavromula Beta yet?
No. I don't know anything about the place. Certainly never been to it and don't have any plans to go.
Oh, you go there, all right. You go there, all right. Oh, Zark! I brought you here too soon! I brought you here too zarking soon!
Well, that's a dreadful bore for you, of course, but there it is.
I'm going to kill you anyway! Even if it's a logical impossibility, I'm going to zarking well try! I'm going to blow this whole mountain up!
Leave that switch alone!
Let's see you get out of this one, Dent!
If that does what I think it does, you'll be bringing about your own death this time. Don't do it!
I'm going to kill you!
No, you're not! Oh, you shouldn't have tried to bite me. Gosh, those teeth are sharp. You've made a real mess of yourself.
You know what you've done? You've gone and killed me again. I mean, what do you want from me? Blood?
I'm sorry. No, no, no. Not the switch. What to do now? Run. But where? Anywhere. Daylight! Daylight this way! Oh, great! An avalanche! Whoa, but logically. I'm bound to survive this, if only to pursue my alleged persecution of Agrajag on Stavromula Beta. But if this isn't it, why am I still panicking? Why am I still risking my life? And why? Lying in front of me is a small navy blue holdall that I know for a fact I lost in the baggage retrieval system at Athens Airport 10 years ago. Oh, I'm falling! Upwards? No! I'm flying!
The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy has this to say on the subject of flying. There is an art, it says, or rather, a knack to flying. The knack lies in learning how to throw yourself at the ground and miss. Pick a nice day, it suggests, and try it. The first part is easy. All it requires is simply the ability to throw yourself forward with all your weight and the willingness not to mind that it's going to hurt. That is, it's going to hurt if you fail to miss the ground. Most people fail to miss the ground, and if they're really trying properly, the likelihood is that they will fail to miss it fairly hard. Clearly, it's the second point, the missing, which presents the difficulties. One problem is that you have to miss the ground accidentally. It's no good deliberately intending to miss the ground because you won't. You have to have your attention suddenly distracted by something else when you're halfway there, so that you're no longer thinking about falling, or about the ground, or about how much it's going to hurt if you fail to miss it. It is notoriously difficult to prize your attention away from these three things during the split second you have at your disposal. Hence most people's failure and their eventual disillusionment with this exhilarating and spectacular sport. Do not listen to what anybody says to you at this point, because they're unlikely to say anything helpful. They're most likely to say something along the lines of, "Good God, you can't possibly be flying." It is vitally important not to believe them, or they will suddenly be right. If, however, you're lucky enough to have your attention momentarily distracted at the crucial moment by, a gorgeous pair of legs, tentacles, pseudopodia according to Philum, and or personal inclination, you will miss the ground completely. Try a few swoops, gentle ones at first, then drift above the treetops, breathing regularly. Do not wave at anybody. When you've done this a few times, you'll find the moment of distraction rapidly becomes easier and easier to achieve. In the case of Arthur Dent, his instincts have correctly told him that he mustn't think about it, or the law of gravity will suddenly glance sharply in his direction and demand to know what the hell he thinks he's doing up here.
Oh! Ah! Tulips! I'll think about tulips. This is great! No, tulips. Nice tulips. The pleasing, firm roundness of the bottom of tulips. The interesting variety of colours they come in. Oh, I'm bored. Oh, mustn't be bored. That way groundness lies. Stay distracted. Stay flying. I'm flying. No, distract yourself. The bag. The bag, that's a point. How can a hold all I left at Athens Airport end up here? Who cares? I'm flying. Concentrate, Arthur. Whoa. Don't concentrate. Okay. Let's use this fall and turn it into a swoop. And I should be able to grab it. Oh, gosh. I haven't seen that since I gave it to the pretty stewardess with a nice... too distracted. Look, Arthur. You're 200 feet above the ground. Better. Okay, think of the bag. If it's still in the state in which I lost it, it'll contain a can which would have in it the only Greek olive oil still surviving in the universe. If I can just... Yes, got it! Not only a can of Greek olive oil, but the cricket ball I caught at Lord's. Very odd. What else? A duty-free allowance of retsina. Some interesting stones. And joy of joys, my towel! Oh, if only Ford could see me now!
Arthur, look out! You're going to crash into the party!
Ford? What?
When Arthur Dent, Ford Prefect, and Slarty Bartfast arrived, the longest and most destructive party ever held was into its fourth generation, and still no one showed any sign of leaving. The mess was extraordinary, and had to be seen to be believed. There had recently been some bangs and flashes up in the clouds, and there is one theory that these were battles being fought between the feet of several rival carpet cleaning companies who were hovering over the thing like vultures. But you shouldn't believe anything you hear at parties, and particularly not anything you hear at this one. One of the problems, and one which would obviously get worse, was that all the people at the party were either the children, or the grandchildren, or the great-grandchildren of the people who wouldn't leave in the first place. And because of all the business about selective breeding and regressive genes and so on, it meant that all the people currently at the party were either absolutely fanatical partygoers or gibbering idiots, or, more and more frequently, both. Either way, it meant that, genetically speaking, each succeeding generation was now less likely to leave than the preceding one. Now, because of certain things that had happened which seemed like a good idea at the time, and one of the problems with a party which never stops is that all the things which only seem like a good idea at parties continue to seem like good ideas. One of the things which seemed like a really good idea at the time was that the party should fly, literally. One night long ago, a band of drunken astro-engineers clambered round the building calibrating this, fixing that, banging very hard on the other, and when the sun rose the following morning, it was startled to find itself shining on a building full of happy, drunken people which was floating like a young and uncertain bird over the treetops. The flying party had also managed to arm itself rather heavily. If they were going to get involved in any petty arguments with wine merchants, they wanted to make sure they had might on their side.
All right, do as we say and nobody gets hurt.
What do you people want?
Hand over all your cheese footballs and those little savoury twig things, the ones with the tasty brown paint on.
But we are simple farmers.
Shut up and get stacking.
And we want the cakes, fairy cakes.
Better give us 50 cases of Cabernet Sauvignon as well.
Cabernet, but we only drink milk.
Don't give me that.
All right. What vintage?
They looted, they raided, they held whole cities for ransom for fresh supplies of cheese crackers, avocado dip and wine and spirits. But the planet over which they were floating was no longer the planet it had been when they started. It was in bad shape and had been since long before Agrajag destroyed its only respectable mountain in the vain attempt to kill Arthur Dent. But it was one hell of a party. It was also one hell of a thing to get hit by in the small of the back, as Arthur Dent has just discovered.
Ah, Ford,
where the fetid photon have you been?
Is this Slarty Bartfast's party?
Hold tight, Earthman. There's only a very thin walkway around the building.
Everywhere I touch, it hurts.
Then don't touch it. You've sprained your wrist.
What are you doing out here?
They won't let us in without a bottle.
Ah, there, I think I can help you.
Got a bottle?
Retsina.
Never heard of it. In you come.
Thank you so much.
Right, now we're in, we can...
Your bottle! What is it?
Retsina, an earth drink. Very rare, now. Hey!
And you, please, you...
That's mine!
I warned you. Never trust a pterodactyl in Urex.
No, you didn't.
Oh, I forgot.
Good grief! It's Trillium!
Yeah, and that's Thor, the thunder god, with her. Blimey, half of Asgard have turned up. I wonder if Seyfort's here. I'll go and look over by the drinks.
Trillium, how the hell did you get here?
Didn't I see you at Miliway's?
Were you the one with the hammer?
Yes, I much prefer it here. So much less reputable, so much more fraught.
Well, it seems fun.
Trillium!
Oh, what are you trying to say, Arthur?
I said, how the hell did you get here?
Oh, I was a row of dots floating randomly through the universe. Have you met Thor? He's in Thunder.
Hello.
Hey.
I expect that must be very interesting.
It is. Have you got a drink?
No, actually.
Then why don't you go and get one?
See you later, Arthur.
Seyfort isn't here, is he?
See you later.
One of the interesting things about being immortal is you don't know.
One of the interesting things about space is how dull it is.
Slarty Bartfast?
Dull? Really?
Staggeringly dull. Bewilderingly so. You see, there is so much of space and so little in it. Would you like me to quote you some statistics?
What do you think?
They, too, are quite sensationally dull.
Well, you must tell me all about it when I'm interested. Excuse me.
Slarty Bartfast?
I thought you'd never go.
Drink?
Come, Earthman.
But I'm in the drinks queue.
No, we have to find the silver bale. It is here somewhere.
Oh, can't we relax a little? I've had a tough day. Trillium's being chatted up by a thunder god who was very rude to me. I'd consider thumping him if the muscles in his upper arm didn't move around each other like a couple of Volkswagens parking.
Think of the danger to the universe.
The universe is big enough and old enough to look after itself for half an hour.
Please.
All right. I'll circulate and see if anybody's seen it.
Good, good. I'll do this side of the party. You do that.
Ah, hello. Hello there.
Hello!
Have you seen a bale anywhere? Made of silver. Vitally important for the future safety of the universe and about this long.
No, but come and have a drink and tell me all about it.
You're a great little dancer.
Thank you.
Like that hat.
I'm not wearing a hat.
Oh, right. Like the head.
What?
Ow, the head. Interesting bone structure.
What?
Ow. Ever heard of the Sydney Opera House?
What?
I said, look, could you not nod so much?
What?
You keep pecking me on the head. Ow.
My planet was blown up one morning. No. That's why I'm dressed like this, in my dressing gown. My planet was blown up with all my clothes in it, you see.
Oh, dear.
I didn't realise I'd be coming to a party.
Wow, right, yeah.
Later, I was thrown off a spaceship. Still, in my dressing gown.
Oh.
Rather than the spacesuit one would normally expect.
Quite, yes.
Well, shortly after that, I discovered my planet had originally been built for a bunch of mice.
Mice?
So you can imagine how I felt about that.
Extraordinary.
I was then shot at for a while and blown up.
Oh, really?
In fact, I have been blown up ridiculously often. Oh. Shot at, insulted, regularly disintegrated, deprived of tea, and recently I crashed into a swamp and had to spend 5 years in a damp cave.
Uh-huh. And did you have a wonderful time? What an exciting life you must lead. I must find someone to tell about it.
But... Oh, never mind.
Hey, did I hear you say your name just now?
Yes, it's Arthur Dent.
Yeah, only there's a man in a mountain wanted to see you. Well, more of a 4-foot fruit bat with an orthodontic condition.
I met him.
Yeah, and he seemed pretty anxious about it, you know.
I know, I met him.
Yeah, well, I think you should know that, yeah?
I do, I met him.
Okay, all right, I'm just telling you, right? Good night, good luck, win awards.
What?
Oh, whatever, do what you do. Who cares? Why not go mad? Oh, get off my back, will you, guy? Just sark off.
Keep your hairpiece on. I'm going.
Yeah, right. It's been real. Big ups, eh? Eh?
What was that about?
Him?
Yes. Did you hear that?
Of course.
Why did he tell me to win awards?
Showbiz talk. He's just won an award at the annual Ursa Minor Alpha Recreational Illusions Institute award ceremony, and he was hoping to be able to pass it off lightly. Only you didn't mention it, so he couldn't.
What was it for?
The most gratuitous use of the word fuck in a serious screenplay. It's very prestigious.
Oh. And what award do you get for that?
A Rory. Little silver thing set in a large black base. What did you say?
I didn't say anything. I was just about to ask.
I thought you said whop. Did you say whop?
What?
No, whop.
People had been dropping in on the party for years. Fashionable gatecrashers from other worlds. And for some time it occurred to the partygoers, as they looked out at their own world beneath them with its wrecked cities, its ravaged avocado farms and blighted vineyards, its vast tracts of new desert, its seas full of biscuit crumbs and worse, that their world was, in some tiny and almost imperceptible ways, not quite as much fun as it had been. Then, one day, as the party came screaming out of the clouds and the farmers looked up in haggard fear of yet another cheese and wine raid, it suddenly became clear that the party would soon be over. Very soon it would be time to gather up hats and coats and stagger blearily outside to find out what time of day it was. The party was locked in a horrible embrace with a strange white spaceship, which appeared to be half sticking through it. Together they lurched, heaving and spinning their way round the sky, in grotesque disregard of their own weight. Then suddenly, the cricket ship was gone. The party was now a mortally wounded party. All the fun had gone out of it, and the longer that it avoided the ground, the heavier was going to be the crash when finally it hit it.
Arthur, what happened?
The cricket robots. They've come and gone and taken it.
Taken what?
The award for the most gratuitous use of the word fuck in a serious screenplay.
I'm sorry.
The silver bale. It was the award. I feel almost as sick as a runner-up for a Rory.
Dingo's kidneys. I need another drink.
I'm not sure you've got time.
Fair enough. We would love to stay and help, only we're not going to. We have to go and save the universe, you see, and if that sounds like a pretty lame excuse, then you may be right. Either way, we're off. Slip me that unopened bottle and the packet of crisps.
Where's Trillian?
Earthman, we must go!
Trillian!
I'm over here, Arthur.
The girl stays with me. We're flying on to great party going on in Valhalla.
Where were you when all this was going on?
Upstairs. I was weighing her. Tricky business flying. You have to calculate the... Whoa!
She comes with us.
Hey, don't I have
no,
to say it?
You come with us.
She comes with me.
Earthman, I have the teleport device ready. We really must leave.
Arthur, cool it with the Viking.
Want to make something of it?
I beg your minuscule pardon.
I said, do you want to make something of it?
Arthur?
Arthur, he's got a hammer the size of a telegraph pole.
This is madness, Earthman.
Do I want to make something of it?
Yes. So you want to step outside?
All right. Follow me.
That's got rid of him. Slarty, get us out of here.
All right, so I'm a coward. The point is, I'm still alive.
So am I, aren't I?
You damn nearly weren't.
Don't you understand anything?
Later, later. While you two are bickering, the cricket robots have got the silver bale. If they've already got the gold bale and three pillars, they hold a key to the wicked gate.
I'm sure I had some crisps.
I'm afraid we've fared rather pathetically at the party.
Story of my life. Where's Trillian?
More important than that, where's my crisps?
They're both in the room of informational illusions. Your young lady friend is trying to understand how these problems arose. The potato crisps, I can only assume, are helping her. Our only hope now is to try to prevent the cricket robots from using the key in the lock. How in heaven we do that, I don't know. Just have to go there, I suppose. Can't say I like the idea at all. Probably end up dead.
As the starship Bistromath alters course with the turn of a side salad and half bottle of Chianti, what has become of Zaphod Beeblebrox and Marvin the paranoid android? Will the cricket robots assemble and use the key to the wicket gate? And with everything to play for, will there be time for the next installment of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
In that episode of The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy by Douglas Adams, William Franklin was the book. Simon Jones played Arthur Dent, Jeffrey McGiven, Ford Prefect, Susan Sheridan, Trillian, Dominic Hawksley, Thor the Thunder God, and Richard Griffiths was Slarty Bartfast. Douglas Adams played Agra Jag, Bob Golding, the award winner, and Joanna Lumley was the woman with the Sydney Opera House head. The announcer was John Marsh. The surround mix was by Paul Dealey, and the live FX by Ken Humphrey. The script editor was John Langdon, and the music was by Paul Wicks Wickens. The production assistants were Laura Harris and Joe Wheeler. The programme was adapted, directed, and co-produced by Dirk Maggs. The producers were Helen Chatwell and Bruce Hyman, and it was an above-the-title production for BBC Radio 4. The sound of 100,000 people saying WOP is the registered trademark of the Cricket Cola Corporation.